This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report. I am so thrilled to find out that you're still. No, he's popping up everywhere now. That was ominous. No, go away. Even your own people told you to go away. Anyway, we'll get to him. Don't worry. We're leading off the show with him anyway. I don't know what I was gonna say. I'm John. It's Monday. It's feeling a little fantastic. We've got Francesca Fiorentini. How's it going, Francesca?
Woo! I'm good. I'm very good.
You just see a little bit of Duterte for like a second. Yeah. Anyway.
Is that who I am to you? Is that who
No.
We're just getting dictator subliminal messages throughout the show.
We're gonna get some later on because I've included a little bit about Bolsonaro for you. I thought you might fun. Like that.
Yes.
But anyway, Francesca, very glad to have you here. I know that you've been busy. The Bituation Room never sleeps. It doesn't take a weekend off. What happened on yesterday's episode?
Oh, we had Mr. J.R. Jackson of TYT on, and it was so good. I made him watch Megan Thee Stallion's new music video. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. Fun to watch someone
him do that.
Why would he not want to do that? That seems like something consistent with him.
Very true, but he hadn't yet. So it was fun and we talked about it. And I can't wait for all right wingers to freak out about it this week. At least I feel like I hope maybe they'll be quiet. Unlikely. But yes, everyone listen to or watch the Bituation Room. YouTube/Franny Fio is where you can find that or on any podcast platform.
That is awesome. Quick trivia for you. Have I seen that music video?
Probably not. It just came out.
Anyway, have I seen any music video?
Like if I were 18, 19, I'd be like, oh, I can write my entire college thesis on this. You probably can't, but I would definitely have tried.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I bet you could write a good satirical video for YouTube about it.
Indeed.
Anyway, we're gonna be talking today on the program about Megan's new video. No, we're gonna be talking about a lot of stuff though. We're gonna be talking about Israel. He is looming in the background. We're gonna give you an update on coronavirus. Doctors have discovered one weird trick that stops the spread of coronavirus. And we're gonna talk about it. That's gonna be fun. Kayleigh McEnany, still around, still lying after all these years. So that's gonna be fun. What's going on in Brazil? Spoiler alert, nothing good. Then AOC saying things that are kind of good. That'll be good. And then we've got a lot of stuff besides. We're gonna be diving into critical race theory. Because apparently everyone else in the country has. So why shouldn't we? And then we've got a little bit of Obama. Oh, also today's Monday. So for our tier two and tier three members on YouTube, every Monday, except for last week because of issues, we do a top 10 list. And we've got one that I think is very timely, very necessary if you are feeling the strain of the times that I am. And that is top 10 reasons to still be optimistic about the future despite all of this. So that should be fun and we'll have that after the show. Also coming up after the show, by the way, is Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. Now in its second week, you can watch it where you watch everything from TYT as well as youtube.com/indisputable TYT at 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time. The second week of Indisputable had an amazing reaction to the first week. Well, the fun continues right after TDR today. Now with that said, Francesca, you ready to do this thing?
Yes, I'm going to think about how I'm optimistic for the next hour.
Exactly.
So I can be ready.
Don't worry, you'll be ready just like BB was ready for us to start this show. So let's jump into it. They said it couldn't be done. I honestly don't know if they said that, but it has been done. Benjamin Netanyahu's hold on political power in Israel has finally, maybe briefly, gone away after 12 years in charge. No more. And we've got something far more complicated to replace it. We have this unity government, a combination of a variety of different parties that don't necessarily seem to get along on some fairly core issues, but we'll see how that goes. So they're calling for right-wing former defense minister Naftali Bennett to serve as prime minister for 2 years before handing over the job to centrist Yair Lapid. Isn't it interesting, man, to know like ahead of time how that's gonna go? Like imagine some sort of deal being brokered in the US where it's like, okay, that 2000 election, that was rough. So you know what, we're gonna give Bush 2 years and then Gore gets it. Inconceivable, Francesca. Like we got a lot more. We got a ton more, but
don't threaten me with a parliament this early in the morning, John. I can't. My heart. I haven't had enough coffee.
Yeah.
But yes,
I'm fueling up as well. So, but basically, the coalition, the ruling coalition that's going to be producing this very interesting transfer in power for the prime ministership, is composed of 8 different, incredibly ideologically disparate parties. From the left, center, and the right, including for the first time in Israel's history, a party from the country's Arab Islamist community. So that is certainly going to be interesting. And by the way, it was the fact that they got this coalition in the end was fairly fraught. Very close vote, 60-59 in the Knesset. In a sign of challenges to come, one lawmaker who had originally agreed that they were going to support this coalition decided not to at the last minute, but they had one vote waiting in the wings. The wings of a hospital that lawmaker had to leave to vote and then returned to her hospital bed afterwards. So, wow. But I mean,
I'm not laughing.
Obviously, it's you don't necessarily want to have a party that's sort of ruling by such narrow margins, but at least it's an area of the world that, like, you know, just nothing really happens. It's just good vibes all the time. So, it should be fine. What are your thoughts?
It's an incredible sign of like how much Netanyahu has fallen from favor that someone would lift themselves out of their hospital bed. And like, you know, I can imagine just sort of the IV drip in hand, like, oh my God, get me to that vote. You know, I'm there. Obviously, I don't know who this is. I wish them well, but good move, power move. It's huge that Netanyahu is out. I mean, I think that it is important to understand what a big change this is and also say good riddance, right? Bye-bye, goodbye. Yeah. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. He's not, obviously we're gonna talk about how he's not gonna try and be gone, but that he has so radically shifted politics in Israel to the right for the worse. And that this new government might not actually be better. There are elements that are far more right wing, but at least in that moment, especially when you're talking about if Israel does consider itself a democracy, which is questionable considering how it treats Palestinians living inside of it, as well as in the occupied territories. But if it has a semblance, it needed to move on from Netanyahu being the prime minister and at the helm of this. So I say good riddance, like I'm welcoming a change. I'm not expecting much, but I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. Is it like, okay, you can get rid of Trump, but you get Dick Cheney?
Totally. Like, yes.
Well, that's not better, but yes.
In coalition with Jill Stein. And you're like, what? Exactly. Weird. Wait, I don't know.
And also Bullock's on board. I don't know. Exactly. Kind of like that. Yes. So as you've been saying, as I alluded to earlier, this is a complex situation that raises a lot of, I think, very interesting questions about how, if worse and probably worse, how much worse on which issues, on which other issues will the sort of disparate nature of the coalition actually lead to less far right outcomes? What does this have to say for the future of the peace process, for relations with other countries in the region? And to all of those, I say, I have no idea. I don't know anything. You know what? You know what's needed on the internet? People in positions like me saying they don't know, because they generally don't know. They just don't say that they don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm doing some reading, I'm doing some research. We're gonna bring on some experts to try to understand the situation, but I have no goddamn idea. Let's see if we can figure something out based on a little bit of the early scholarship on this change and what's known about members of the coalition. So, Mr. Bennett's religious Zionist party, Yamina, supports annexation of large parts of the West Bank, and vehemently opposes Palestinian statehood, positions antithetical to some of its own governing parties, which I find so fascinating. By the way, that party only won 7 of the seats in the parliament, making it the smallest faction to ever hold the premiership. So in a coalition of 8 parties, it actually has very, very few seats. By the way, Netanyahu's party actually won 30 seats in March's election. But because it's a parliament, simply having the most seats isn't what really counts if you can't put together a governing coalition. So despite having won more than 4 times as many seats as the party for whom they now have the prime ministership, he is out of power. And so what I wonder is, how often can there be a reconfiguring of the coalition? If Bennett's party does some insane things in the West Bank, could some of the more leftist parties drop out? Would that then, I don't know, this is very complicated.
Oh God, again, once again, the joys and the intrigue of a parliamentary system of having more than 2 parties. What I do know is that sadly, the Israeli left, and I take whenever it is reported on that there's a real leftist party in Israel with a grain of salt, because they've largely been sidelined, right? And so, and I mean, again, similar to Trump, Netanyahu created a politic in which everyone wanted to be more Netanyahu and more Trump in the United States than he himself, right? So that's why you have Naftali Bennett being like, I do want to annex, you know, large parts of the West Bank. Netanyahu doesn't necessarily go that far, but he's doing it. Do you know what I'm saying? And so like, and that's the other thing is like, if their seats in parliament have the ability to block this coalition from getting quote unquote anything done, and by anything done, that might actually be annexing other people's land, then they might lose control, right? And so my hope is that given how incredibly, again, far right some of Israeli politics are right now, that at least a little bit of like gumming up the works will help, and help for, you know, social movements with inside Israel, right? And progressives and left, real leftists, to hopefully gain and put pressure on their government. And I think that's a possibility now that Netanyahu's power hold is shown to be broken and shown to be weaker, right?
Yeah, potentially. I think that's a good takeaway. You know, I'm not gonna read the last few graphics. Just know that Netanyahu is not taking it well. I'll say that he's been sort of freaking out, but whatever. He says he'll be back. I don't know. The world's terrible. He's probably right. He probably will be back, but we'll find out.
No. He says he will be back, but he's also like, I'm going to make sure you fail. You know, it's like very like, you kids, you know, end of Scooby-Doo. I'll get you next time. I feel like I've been doing a lot of Inspector Gadget in this, but like lately, it's my thing. Just have like an iron fist. But I think the other thing, I had a thought, John, and it was smart, and then it left me.
Oh, okay. Well, perhaps it'll come back. You know what? And we can always return to it. That's the freeform nature of the internet. Anyway, we will of course, you know, be watching for this. And far more importantly, I'm gonna try to bring on some reasonable and incompetent journalists from the region to see if they can do the difficult job of keeping me up to date with what's going on there. Because of course it matters for a lot of people who have historically been through quite a bit, and even recently have as well. What would that last situation have been had this coalition been in charge? Those are the sort of stakes that we're talking about, so we will be watching. Anyway, with that, we are gonna take our first break, but you're gonna wanna stick around, because when we come back, 2 different approaches to coronavirus, which one's gonna win, as well as Kayleigh McEnany popping up to remind us of how terrible she was. Oh, it's gonna be a little bit of nostalgia on the Damage Report after this. Okay, what is going on out there? They say the pandemic is over. Are they right? Or does it really depend on where you are? Let's find out. Fox News isn't over you being terrified about the pandemic, not about the sickness. That simultaneously has to be nothing to worry about, and yet you have to be scared about something. So they've come up with something, and that is one more reason to not trust the vaccine. I literally just went to Fox News to see what are they saying about the pandemic. Are they happy about the fact that case counts are down? And I found this. Vaccinated Los Angeles doctor diagnosed with COVID-19 warns about breakthrough cases. So As far as I can tell, this story is perfectly legitimate. I just find their takeaway from it to be pretty fascinating. So they're talking about Dr. Eugene Choi, a Los Angeles-based radiologist who said on Saturday in an interview that he came down with COVID-19 despite receiving the vaccine about 6 months ago. He said that he was surprised when the diagnosis came through, but when he learned that his wife was also diagnosed, he realized it wasn't a fluke. And then Fox says he still insists people should be vaccinated. Well, yeah, of course he would. What, like, I am perfectly fine with you profiling people who've gotten the vaccine and have still gotten COVID. It is a reminder that safety measures outside of vaccination are still necessary. The idea that you would try to use it as a reason to say, well, then what's the point? That seems sort of backwards and wholly consistent with Fox News's public health messaging over the last year. Francesca, any thoughts?
I mean, you got fully vaccinated people trying to stick keys to their foreheads. Like, I don't know, which immediately makes me feel like they're totally not vaccinated. They're just saying that and doing that.
Yeah, but are they vaccinated? I don't think they'd be vaccinated and do the key thing.
I don't think so either. If they are, I mean, if you've got that many worms in your brain that you're gonna stand up on television and do that, you definitely didn't get, you know, a vaccine. But I will say, it's so interesting when you look at headlines from FoxNews.com and like and Breitbart back in the day, you know, and the way that it's not fake, but it's so skewed and so selective, and also they're citing a site, like it is absolutely. Of course, the worldview they wanna project, which is you should be like very suspicious. People are still getting COVID-19. Nobody said COVID-19 was going away and that you wouldn't get it. That's it. No one's. They said it would drastically reduce your chances of getting it, and specifically reduce your chances of dying from it.
Yeah,
being hospitalized and then potentially dying. I don't know. It seems like this doctor was not hospitalized. That's important to note, but they're completely irresponsible. And again, when you've politicized medicine, again, well, I know we're supposed to be optimistic later, but I feel like we're headed to another dark age, y'all. Like, we really are.
I think we are.
And I think we might be in it. We might be on the cusp of it. But like, Trump was our, like, you know, I don't know. We're about Harbinger. To. We're Galileoing Fauci. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are.
Look that up, look, internet.
Exactly. If you can trust it. Oh my God. There's your funt right there. Sorry. Anyway, so yes, nobody said all of the things that Francesca just said. Nobody said, but I want to focus on the things that were said, because I need to remind people. Everybody has known, and every scientist and public health official has been saying, there is still a chance that you can get it. That's what 90% effective means. I know that we have simple monkey brains, and so we think, oh, 90%, that's 100%, right? But no, it's actually not. It's quite different. It's 10 different. So let's talk about these numbers. Now, these numbers are coming from Fox News. I generally think they're probably acceptable, but anyway, they demonstrate the point. A recent study from the CDC shows that Pfizer and Moderna are about 90% effective against infection once 2 weeks after the last dose has passed. The one dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine is about 72% effective against moderate to severe disease. Now, those are pretty good numbers, but very importantly, they're not 100%, which means you can still get it. That does not, however, mean, so what's the point? Mm-hmm. And that should not need to be said. Everyone 100% gets that, or at least 90% gets that. You know what's happened sometimes? People who were packing a pistol got shot during a mugging or a robbery. Having a gun for self-defense is not 100% effective. So I guess you shouldn't do it. I guess there's no point. Fox would never do that as an article. But this is designed to say that if the best defense we have is only 90% effective, there's no point in defending yourself at all, which is madness.
Oh, wow. Interesting example, John, because I would say in most cases where people were armed, they were still hurt, maimed, and more people were killed. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's more like 15% vaccine, 90%. fighting fire with fire in a moment's notice when someone has a gun.
Yeah.
10-15% maybe. Everyone wants to think they're a hero and that they can just sort of, you know, exactly, like matrix their way into being one. No, you can't. Sorry. But yes, you can get a vaccine. I mean, look, if there is a silver lining to all of this, right? And I think we saw this from the beginning. It's that local and state, local, county, and state governments matter. There is more eyeballs on, there are more eyeballs on them. We are looking to them to be leaders because from the federal level and from a just a pure information level, we're being completely let down. So you can't turn on, you know, Fox News. I mean, when could you have ever? But I just got a text this morning that there was their COVID vaccines in a mobile unit. Remember, I wanted a van, so I hope it's a man in a van. And it looks like there is near in my neighborhood, which is wonderful. And so I think those are the programs that, thanks to, you know, some federal funding, but enacted and implemented on a statewide and a countywide level, that we should be heralding, that are important. So absolutely, in this time, you know, obviously looking to the damage report, but looking to, yes, your local leaders for a little bit more guidance, I think can only be a benefit. This is, again, a silver lining in just sort of a large turd of us completely effing up the response to this pandemic.
It does. let's move now to something that maybe, if the theme of today is optimism, here's a little bit of optimism for you as we move into this. Doctors have discovered one weird trick to make COVID less common. And it's a mind blower. So you're gonna wanna sit down for this as we dive into these numbers. So first of all, current situation of the pandemic in the US, nationally, 43% of eligible Americans are fully vaccinated. And the country is now averaging under 16,000 new infections a day, which we haven't seen since like March of last year. However, there are 10 states concentrated in the deep south and rural west reporting fewer than 35% of residents are fully immunized. Now, so that's the situation. We're getting the immunizations up, cases overall are going down. So what's the weird trick? Well, it turns out, I'm gonna go through this slowly. States with higher vaccination rates now have markedly fewer coronavirus cases. Isn't that amazing? They got vaccinated and now there's less cases. And places where they didn't get as many vaccinations are not seeing as big of a drop. Do I need to repeat that? Because it's a wild one. The vaccine is stopping people from getting sick. Now, obviously, that should be common sense, but the Washington Post has done a statistical analysis, not just at the state level, but breaking down areas within states, because there could be a wide divergence between different areas of states in how many people have gotten vaccinations. And that's what they found. They also found that states with lower vaccination also have significantly higher hospitalization rates, because of course they do. People are still getting COVID and COVID has a chance of putting you in the hospital. Now, because the difference between states isn't 100%, like there, they're saying, you know, it might be 43% on average, 35% or a little bit less in some of these deep south states. No state is still like 100% open to coronavirus as it was a year ago. Partially because some people are getting vaccinated no matter what. And also because states like that, let's keep it real, had more cases of COVID providing temporary immunity to the virus. So let's bear in mind that poorly vaccinated communities have not been reporting what would be considered catastrophic conditions. Instead, they're usually seeing new infections holding steady or increasing without overwhelming local hospitals. And because of how many people, over 33 million Americans have had COVID, it's unlikely to ever reach those catastrophic conditions again. That said, you can compare different states and different areas within states, and the areas that got vaccinated are doing better. Francesca, I know it's difficult to accept.
It is, and I think, you know, look, 43% fully vaccinated is something like 50 or just above who had one dose. I don't know if we're gonna get to Biden's July 4th, we all, you know, open mouth, kiss one another over the grill.
Like, I'm not,
I mean, too late for me, number one, but two, no, I don't know if we're gonna get there. I don't think we're actually gonna see, we know we're not gonna see herd immunity. I don't think we're gonna see the 70% of vaccinated people by July 4th. We've got less than a month to do that. So I would just say for everyone and their own communities and families to not be afraid to ask, you know, and not be afraid to be discerning, you know, of saying, look, I'm only having a small gathering for like vaccinated people. That's okay. I'm trying to keep everybody safe. Since once again, we know that somehow we're not checking vax cards, even though why the hell not? And that, you know, a lot of businesses aren't doing that, you know, and there are many different reasons. I don't want to argue about it, but for you keeping your family and friends safe, it's a perfectly normal question to ask. And just to be cautious, as you know, that more people than you think are not getting vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And that's sad. I encourage everyone to try and get someone vaccinated. But I also know in this, by the same token, to be wary that not everyone is.
Exactly. Yeah. And just, you know, one added little extra thing to throw out there is that variants continue to pop up and spread. And this so-called Delta variant, it's really bad, way more transmissible than original recipe COVID was last year. And by the way, importantly, is showing a significantly higher ability to break through the vaccine, at the very least for people who've been vaccinated once. So, and I know there's a lot of people who, I got one and now there's so little COVID, I don't need it. Please do not be that person, or that have been convinced, and this has been a thing that they've been talking about on Fox a lot recently, which is, what's the point? I got it already, I don't need it. They are pushing that despite the fact that that is not at all what doctors say. It is believed that it is temporary, your protection. It needs to be supplemented and extended with the vaccine. And I am very worried. Right now in the UK, cases are going up once again, probably because of these sorts of variants. It is not impossible that that could happen in the US, that even in a situation where we have much more collective approaching a herd immunity. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really good against like maybe old COVID, which was transmissible, but not as much as these. These are much easier to spread. They might be able to break through even that. So that's my fear. Hopefully people will start to take it seriously.
Swear to God, if there's COVID 2022, I'm just gonna have like armies of children and like teach them survival skills. And then we'll like just sort of like booby trap my house. Yes, I rent, but whatever. And
you just have to remove the booby traps when you move. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I can build an underground revolutionary army from my womb in a year, I feel like I know that doesn't work out mathematically in terms of gestation. I'm getting off topic, John. What I'm saying is I really hope there's not a quarantine.
What you're saying is that we all have to be ready to live out a sweet tooth type situation. So yes, we will do that. Uh-huh. Anyway, let's move on to, you didn't watch Sweet Tooth, did you?
Nope.
That's fine. Let's move on to very different news. It's been a few months, hasn't it? No, don't point at the, you don't like them. Don't point at them like that. Anyway, Kayleigh McEnany is back and trying to, I don't know, revamp her reputation, rewrite history a little bit. Here is what she had to say about her own history with the truth and the likelihood that right wingers will get called lies even though they never actually lie.
And then there was the question, will you ever lie to us? And I said without hesitation, no, and I never did. As a woman of faith, as a mother of baby Blake, as a person who meticulously prepared at some of the world's hardest institutions, I never lied. I sourced my information, but that will never stop the press from calling you a liar. Which is why my dad said, Kayleigh, you've got to come up with a motto for your press shop. And I did, and our motto was this, offense only. Because I knew what we were up against. Republicans always get the bad headlines, always get the false stories, always get the lies, if I can use that word, told by the press. There is one standard for Democrats and another for Republicans.
Okay, well, their offense only offs, I did generally find pretty offensive, so that's true. Why play defense when you're lying? Don't ever actually address the lies. That seems like a pretty savvy strategy. So there, Francesca, as a Christian woman, as a mother to baby Blake, she would never tell a lie.
Yeah, I think the worst part about that entire thing, obviously she is lying when she says she did not tell a lie. Yeah. But is that she's, I think, in at a young women's summit, young women's leadership summit. Mm-hmm. And I want y'all to think about what it is to lift up someone like Kayleigh McEnany, who carried water for a multiple alleged rapist, sexual assaulter, somebody who has utter disrespect for women, somebody who did a 180 on his ideas around access to abortion rights, someone who split families up and who put children in cages, someone who completely bastardized the idea of Christianity and religiosity, right? Of morals. I don't ascribe to a lot of those things, but like so the so-called Christian right does. And here they've lifted up their effective, like, you know, I don't know. Maybe when you've done all the deadly sins, you become God. I don't know. Like, is that do you just become the savior? Mm-hmm. But it is so painful as a woman, as someone who might be expected or asked to speak on that summit, or other people who might have been there. And I think Republican women they put a ceiling on themselves all the time, which is we are strong, we are leaders as long as we are carrying out the orders of a very strong man. I love being number five. I love being a number seven in this natural pecking order where the man is first. Like that is, I've spoken to women at conferences like this and they said to my face, I just think we need a big strong man. I think, you know, this country is ready for a strong man and he's strong and he's a leader. And like that is such a ingrained patriarchy and pathology. And like even young Republican women, I think, are fighting back against it.
Yeah. I've heard that. You know, I don't go to those things, but I've seen it on videos. And unfortunately for us in the future, so stay tuned for this. It is not a very big gap to move from we need a strong man to we need a strong man. So I'm a little bit worried about that. That's it. Yeah, you're totally right. Look, I dare to dream that someday. You know, these horrible lying Republican women won't be number five or number seven, that we can get one of them actually in charge. And think about considering everything you know about the right, about their elected leaders, about their media, how horrible of a person would you have to be to make it through that as a woman, considering all the baked in misogyny and all that.
Oh God.
My God. Anyway, and by the way, as you pointed out, she's lying when she says that she doesn't lie. She knows that she lied. That's the job. Like, I don't know how much it bothered her, the insane lies she had to tell. I think that at a certain point, even for someone like her, it would. But what's even more amazing then is to lie about telling lies while claiming you couldn't be lying because you're a Christian and because you're a mother to baby Blake. So first of all, like using God as a shield against your lies shows that you care kind of as little about God as you do about the truth. I'm not a religious person, but if I was, I wouldn't use them to hide my lies to cover for a raping fascist. I just wouldn't. And second of all, motherhood is an amazing thing. Doesn't really have anything to do with your capacity to tell a lie afterward.
Like, no.
That's a weird thing to say. Also, can I just say this? And maybe this will turn me to being the bad guy. It's really weird when you say something like mother to baby Blake. It's a baby. His name's Blake. You can just call him Blake. It's weird to say baby Blake. It just seems like propaganda. It seems weird. I don't know.
Like Blake is anyway, definitely seven at this point. You're like no, baby no, Blake.
He's definitely a baby, but like don't hide behind God and your baby while you're lying. That's weird.
No, it is very weird. Also, like being a parent makes you a better liar. Like that's all you have to do as a parent is lie to your child all the time. Yes, everything's gonna be fine. No, we're not going to be huddled over an oil drum in 20 years and you know, cooking street rats because we haven't stopped climate change. Oh my God, go to school.
Trading cans of cat food. Like, oh, I got a good one. Meow, 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 meow. Anyway, okay, really. started. The way to get her is cat-based humor. Anyway, let's jump into a bit of the evidence. Kayleigh McEnany would have us believe that she's never lied. Unfortunately for her, I mean, come on, people, but also there's video. So first of all, let's go to this little video. This is a fun one.
The president does read and he also consumes intelligence verbally. This president, I'll tell you, is the most informed person on planet Earth when it comes to the threats that we face. You have Ambassador O'Brien, who sees him in person twice a day, who sometimes takes the upwards of half a dozen calls with this president. He's constantly being informed and briefed on intelligence matters. But I'm not going to allow the New York Times to dictate when we give top secret information and don't give top secret information. That's an untenable proposition.
Okay, so he does read. Okay, well, look, he's on Twitter, so she's not wrong there in some ways. He gets it verbally. Well, they talk to him, that's true. But the idea that he or any president is the most informed, they have access to the most information, but he is not the most informed person about literally any topic.
On planet Earth.
Yes, it's just an obvious, like, you know what you're doing there. It's just a crazy exaggeration. Anyway, let's give you some of the information about that though. And we've talked about this previously, but so for, and one of my favorite things is it's been reported that the US National Security Council mentions his name in every paragraph of their briefings in an attempt to retain his attention. And we know how this changed from, you know, like long detailed lists of information that would be given to Obama to one page summaries. To bullet points about him, because that's the only thing. What if you're just listing, here's what's going on in Cameroon, here's what's going on in Iceland, why would his name come up in literally any of it? Imagine how difficult it is to shove his name into updates on what the Taliban is doing.
God.
Most informed.
Yeah.
So there was that.
Trump-Qaeda has reemerged in that you're like, actually, that kind of fits. Look, this, I know we talked about Israel earlier. You know that Bibi named a settlement after Trump? This is real. Probably to get him to pay more attention, but it's like, oh, that worked. Every country should just name, I mean, not anymore, because he's gone away forever. But you know, naming a town after Trump, not the worst idea. Yeah. Not the worst.
I mean, we named a segment after him. We do it every Friday. Now, his lies also had to do with the coronavirus, or her lies were about his lies about the coronavirus, I should say. So she tried to defend when he said that the coronavirus affects virtually nobody. Remember, 33 million people have it, like almost 600,000 people have died from it. But in a rally in Ohio, he said, we now know the disease, we didn't know it, now we know it. It affects elderly people with heart problems and other problems. Remember, he went to the hospital with COVID. Anyway, we continue. But they have other problems. That's what it really affects. That's it. You know, in some states, thousands of people, nobody young, below the age of 18, like nobody. They have a strong immune system. Who knows? But it affects virtually nobody. And when asked about that, that insane, like it's worse in hindsight. We knew at that point it wasn't remotely true. She said, the president is telling people the truth. You're taking the president out of context. No, I'm not. I just went on a whole paragraph of what he was saying. What context is supposed to protect him in that case?
She really was, I think, the most North Korean propagandist of press secretaries. Like I said that before, but she just added that little extra, you know, like no one in this administration has ever double dipped a chip in the history of their life. You know, like it was so over the top. And so I really at least appreciated that, because it also was at the perfect time of his administration where all the wheels were coming off. And so they just needed someone to be like, the wheels are all on. Mm-hmm. What are wheels? Wheels are fake news anyway, you know, like that level. So, you know, she's got a great, I'd watch a game show with Kayleigh McEnany. I would, and her being like, you're not the winner. Mm-mm. She turns the wheel.
She would be good for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll run through some of this. She says that he never downplayed coronavirus. He literally told Bob Woodward that he was always downplaying it. Like, he claimed that the Mueller report ended with the she claimed that the Mueller report ended with the complete and total exoneration of President Trump, which totally isn't true. The Million MAGA March, which had a couple of thousand people at it, she claimed it was more than 1 million people. Maybe lying more than Spicer did about the inauguration crowd. I mean, look, like anything you want, sort of lies of omission, lies of commission, lies of exaggeration, lies about images, lies about videos, lies about quotes, lies about shallow stuff, lies about the most substantive stuff you can imagine, lies of literal life and death significance. She lied and lied and lied. That hopefully will be her continuing reputation, but she's wealthy and white and she's in the media. So I'm sure she's gonna find something delightful for herself to do at some point in the future.
CNN is gonna give it 8 more months and be like, okay, well, you can come back. We need a conservative voice.
Yeah. John. What's your take on Tucker Carlson's primary bid? Anyway, okay, so here's what's gonna happen.
We're supposed to be optimistic.
I know, we're gonna return to optimism. Don't worry, it's about to get even darker though. So we're gonna go away for a few minutes, but after this break, Bolsonaro, what is he up to? What is in the future for Brazil? It's looking a little dark. And then AOC on the future of the Supreme Court after this. Why don't we get back into the news? But don't worry, we're gonna close out this hour with something light, something fun and fluffy, the possible complete fascist takeover of Brazil. So that's gonna be fun. Let's get into it. We unfortunately can't show you the video because of the flagrant middle finger in it, but Bolsonaro, Jair Bolsonaro, president of Brazil, recently got on a plane and the reception was spicy. Jeers and taunting middle fingers, calling him a purveyor of genocide. And that's just trying to get on a phone and or on a plane. I know, we've all been there. Anyway, he had to say about that heckling, those people saying get out Bolsonaro should be traveling by donkey. So he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. Anyway, he is up to a lot of really shady stuff in Brazil. You know, especially recently when it comes to investigations of people critical of him in media, even like independent people like YouTubers and things like that. And a lot of it probably has to do with the fact that coming up in a year, there's going to be an election in Brazil. And right now, it's not looking great for him. The former president, Lula da Silva, his main rival, appears to be strengthening his lead. Neither man has actually announced their candidacy, but it's expected that both are gonna run. And right now, in one recent poll that I found, Lula's lead is fairly significant over Bolsonaro. But let's bear in mind, that only really matters if you have an election and if the election counts. And if you win in the election, you're allowed to actually take control of power. And that is where the concern starts to come in. I'm gonna give you some examples of why people might need to be concerned, but Francesca, I wanted to give you an opportunity. What'd you think about this? We haven't talked about Brazil, you and I, for a bit.
No, I mean, I think what's interesting about this moment for Bolsonaro is that he really had a lot of backing from Trump. And the idea of, you know, the sort of little authoritarian, you know, rat pack that got together and supported one another. And that's changing around the world. And him losing, I mean, Trump losing the White House, Bolsonaro lost an ally, right? And they could sort of deny science together as they oversaw massive amounts of death and the spread of COVID, which they denied and downplayed for months. It's similarly. And now I think these moves that he's making towards even more authoritarianism, a lot of people are saying that's a move of desperation because he knows he's gonna lose. But exactly right. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Bolsonaro to try and stay in power. Honestly, if I were Lula da Silva, I would not want to inherit a Bolsonaro-like presidency and a country. But that being said, I also think that, you know, in the same way that Biden thought he was the only one to be able to emerge out of the Trump era, maybe Lula da Silva is similarly the one who's got the most popularity and name recognition who could actually boot Bolsonaro out.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about what might be inherited. As of right now, 490,000 people officially have been reported to have already died during the pandemic in Brazil. On Saturday, the Brazil's health ministry reported over 2,000 deaths just for that day. So yeah, that's not looking good. And I can understand, like with Trump, these sorts of situations could severely hurt your chances of getting reelected. So maybe you want to have a plan B. And so let's talk about a little bit of that. Appearing alongside thousands of motorcycle riding supporters in Sao Paulo, the far right former army captain said the country's state military police forces serve as a support to what he dubbed my army, saying, quote, "You are auxiliary to the armed forces. I'm sure that in compliance with law and order, by complying with constitutional provisions, we will be together, whatever happens." That's kind of terrifying. And yeah, meeting up with a bunch of people on motorcycles is yet another Trumpian little move that he's got there. Bear in mind with his relationship with the police, Bolsonaro in office, he has sought to boost legal protections for police who kill on the job, saying criminals should, quote, "die like cockroaches," which is not super new. I mean, he's been talking about the need for the state to kill more people for a long time. Back in 2016, he said that the former military dictatorship, the mistake of them was that they tortured and didn't kill. First of all, fact check, they killed a lot of people. He thinks they should have killed more. And as I alluded to, critics of the president, from indigenous leaders to YouTubers, activists to journalists, opposition politicians, have been investigated under the dictatorship era national security law. So there's a lot of concern about that, particularly against the media. He told a reporter last year, "I'd like to punch you in the mouth, you bitch." Jeez. I think that might be bastard. But it's bad either way. And those are two of the words I'm actually allowed to say on the show. That's fun. yeah, he's been saying that. We have one more wrinkle on this, but Francesca, what do you think about the possibility that he might be trying to get forces together for some sort of rejection of election results?
I mean, yeah, and this is the way things come down, whether the police and the military will be on the side of the government or not. I mean, this is sad to say, we've seen it across the world, and we basically saw it in this country on January 6th, where a lot of former military and police officers were part of the insurrection. And I think there was that moment. I mean, look, had Trump not said that those who die at war are suckers and losers, maybe more of the military would have been behind him. But again, we've got the stupid version of a dictator. Maybe Bolsonaro is smarter slash scarier. But this article from The Intercept that I think you're citing, you know, begins with police officers in a northern province of Recife, or I believe a state in Recife, like blinding an elderly person with a rubber bullet. And not because, apparently not because they wanted to, but because they're under orders from Bolsonaro. So that means that, like, again, even local and state police are following his orders. One wonders in a year if they're gonna still be doing that. Mm-hmm. And look, Bolsonaro's also rejected some of the vaccine. I know that's a huge part of it. And we look, no matter what,
you just have to be strong.
Exactly, you just have to be strong. And I do think, like, for better or worse, and in this case, I think for better, and in our case for better, the COVID-19 really politicized like your strongmen, exposed the weaknesses of your strongmen, which is you can't just be strong in the face of COVID-19, it can still kill you, my God. And when rubber hits the road and we need someone who believes in science, these strongmen aren't there for us. So exactly. Yeah.
We have very little time, but I want to give you one added little thing, you know, about the upcoming election. He is saying if they don't switch over entirely to just paper ballots, he's not going to accept the results. Which, look, I would prefer a paper trail too, but I don't think that's why he's doing it. And bear in mind, you talked about the relationship with the Trumps. His son was in Washington, D.C. and met with members of the Trump family and inner circle before, during, and after the Capitol insurrection, and had this to say about the insurrection. "It was a disorganized movement. It was unfortunate. Nobody wanted this to happen. If it were organized, they would have taken over the Capitol and made demands that the invading group established in advance. They would have had minimal military power to not kill anyone, kill all the police inside or the members of Congress that they hate so much. When the right becomes 10% of the left, we are going to have civil war in all Western countries." So cool family you got there. And yeah, a little bit worried about what's gonna happen in the run up to this election. That said, we are running low on time. Lots more news to come after this break. If you're on the linear platform, thank you very much for watching. If you're on YouTube or Twitch, we've got more coming up for you in just a few. We'll see you after this. Welcome back, YouTube, Twitch members. Hello, we got more for you. Let's jump into it. AOC was asked to comment on the conversation about whether Justice Stephen Breyer should be encouraged to step down from his position while there is time for a Democrat to actually replace him. Here's what she had to say.
Your fellow Democrat, Mondaer Jones, says 82-year-old Justice Stephen Breyer should retire so that President Biden and Senate Democrats can fill his seat with a younger liberal successor. Do you think that Justice Breyer should step down after this term?
Well, you know, I believe Representative Jones has a point, and we have had very difficult experiences with making, I believe, the opposite mistake. And especially if Senate Democrats are not going to pass reforms on HR1, we cannot rely solely on a wish of winning elections, particularly in the Senate, when voting rights are under attack in Georgia, Arizona, and Texas, across the country. And if we're not going to pass HR1 with the preemptive clauses that can roll some of that voter suppression attacks back, yeah, I believe that we should protect our Supreme Court, and I thought that should absolutely be a consideration.
So just to be clear, you do think that Justice Stephen Breyer should retire at the end of this term?
You know, I it's something I'd think about, but I would probably lean towards yes.
Okay, so just in response to the headlines that this has generated, let's bear in mind that her saying she leans towards yes in response to a question is a little bit different than her just spontaneously being like, dude, you gotta go.
Yes.
That said, she does seem to believe that he should step down. She's making, you know, calculations about what's likely to happen in future elections, even assuming that they go the way they're supposed to and are not overthrown after all these laws. Francesca, what do you think?
I mean, it's a perfectly fine and normal and smart thing to ask, which is that yes, we protect the few liberal seats on the Supreme Court, and that, you know, judging what Mondaer Jones said was like, have we not learned our lesson? And he was talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, RIP, dying at, you know, the age of 87, when it was clear that she probably should have retired under the Obama administration, right? And like, look, it's funny that even now, thinking about expanding the Supreme Court and how Biden sort of said he would do that or look into it, he's not gonna do that. Yep. He's not gonna do that. The least he can do then is please force a liberal justice to retire so you can appoint someone who is younger, so that we are not utterly bludgeoned by this handmaid's tale that the right is absolutely fixated on. And I say that, like, it feels like it's funny, but it is so upsetting that on the right, there is a concerted effort. There is a decades long process. There are dark money think tanks and groups who know exactly who they would replace every single justice with. They have them waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
They've been appointed under Trump or Bush. They know how they're going to completely control the Supreme Court, right? And we've been losing so hard on this when it comes to, and by losing, I mean the side of progress and the side of, you know, living in the 21st century, has been losing so hard on this. So it's frustrating that we have to look to AOC, who is, you know, a young representative who's got only so much power, completely sidelined by her own party, to say, yeah, maybe we should kind of consider asking him to retire. Like that's our leadership on this?
Because, well, and I guess she and people like, you know, Representative Jones are the only ones that can say that, because they're like the crazy radicals that are accurately, pragmatically understanding the current political situation and how tenuous even that one is. You know, one Democratic senator getting sick or something in the wrong state, and that's it. No, we're done. We're not getting anything. And the only reason, like, I totally agree. We should learn the lesson. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I think, definitely should have retired. That said, the only thing that's makes me a little bit less angry at her is, at least in the last few years of Obama's term, I don't think he would have gotten anyone anyway, apparently. In hindsight, yeah, they weren't going to give him a justice, yes, so maybe it wouldn't have even mattered. But that said, we ended up getting Amy Coney Barrett, and that's going to be a disaster for probably the rest of my time in media, you know? Yes. Anyway, now, how bad is it likely to get? Almost perfectly timed to buttress Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's point, here is Mitch McConnell on with Hugh Hewitt.
Would the rule that you applied in 2016 to the Scalia vacancy apply in 2024 to any vacancy that occurred then?
Well, I think in the middle of a presidential election, if you have a Senate of the opposite party of the president, you have to go back to the 1880s to find the last time a vacancy was filled. So I think it's highly unlikely. In fact, no, I don't think either party, if it controlled, if it were different from the president, would confirm a Supreme Court nominee in the middle of an election. What was different in 2020 was we were of the same party as the president. And that's why we went ahead with it.
That's not why you went ahead with it. That's why you were able to do it. I guess you had the numbers. And Hugh, it's like, oh, correct. Good historical read there. This is definitely how it's always been. No, it's not at all. But we can talk about the history, Francesca. We can make sure that people understand that this is a radical change to the way that it works. But it is done. When he says they're not going to do it in the middle of an election, he's not talking about the last 3 months. He's not talking about the last year. He is talking about any time. Anytime they're able to block it, they're going to block it. There are no justices anymore if they're able to block it. And only because the rules were changed in terms of Supreme Court nominations a few years back, they would be stopping it now. They would be filibustering literally every single one. And we would be going through a news cycle of Manchin talking about how, well, I guess, you know, we just got to fight for more bipartisanship. But if they ever regain the Senate, that's it. On that day, there's no more justices. Doesn't matter if it's a year, 2 years, 3 years from the election, they're not going to do it.
I am a open hypocrite. And I don't see why there's any reason that I have the rules do not apply to me. You see, the rules only apply to the Democrats, but to me, I can just do what I want. We was in power. We were in power. See, that's the difference.
And he's right.
Yeah, no.
If we're in a cynical time where power is the only thing that matters, he is right.
He openly just admitted that he is a hypocrite. He's a proud hypocrite. He's done this. How many times does the leader of the Republican Party need to admit that he relishes in his own hypocrisy for Democrats to understand they will never strike a deal with you on anything? Okay, he just said there, well, you know, we were in election year back then when Obama wanted to appoint Merrick Garland, but we were in election year in 2020 as well, but we were in power. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters. I can't, I mean,
and
how many
times?
Next
time he's going to say, well, yeah, okay, I know I said that then, but now it's the year of the pig, so it's different. No, he's going to come, doesn't matter. I don't care about the excuses. He's going to do what's going to benefit him. It is. It is. Anyway, that's the reality. And so that's what the Democrats need to understand, to the extent that Biden can. I don't even know if pressuring Breyer would work. I don't know, but I think you should probably try. And, you know, I know that we have a lot of Supreme Court justices that watch the Damage Report. Justice Breyer, retire. Just enjoy the last couple of years. Like, honestly, why not? Like, just, yeah. I don't know how old you are. I'm guessing pretty old. Like, we only have this one life. Enjoy it. You're probably pretty rich. I'm sure that you are, and likely to become more so after retiring. Just go. Stephen Colbert will bring you on the show. Like, it'll be great. You'll be super rich. You'll be super happy. Just do that, okay?
Why do we do this to these people? Why is it a lifetime appointment? This is absurd.
I don't know. But let's turn to other absurdities. AOC was asked to comment on the continued battle over whether there's going to be a For the People Act at all. And she's focusing on the exact right part of it, which is this. She's not saying these exact same words, but Joe Manchin is corrupt. You need to get used to hearing it and to saying it, and not just him. all of them are corrupt. In this particular area, the reason that it matters is he is being paid off by his donors to make sure that legislation that he has previously supported, the overwhelming majority of his constituents support, that even Republicans support, does not have a chance of passing, and he's doing it so he'll get paid. She's already pointed that out once. Here she is doing it again.
Well, you know, I think that when we talk about opposition to HR 1 being just about voting rights, we aren't telling the entire story. HR 1 has sweeping lobbying reforms, and I believe that, you know, we have the influence of big money that impacts not just one party, but both parties in the United States Congress. And I do believe that that old way of politics has absolutely an influence in Joe Manchin's thinking and the way he navigates the body. I mean, the things that he cites, like this, I think, romanticism of a bipartisanship is about an era of Republicans that simply do not exist anymore. And I also believe that that the opposition to big money and dark money, you know, you have the Koch brothers and associated organizations from the Koch brothers really doing victory laps about Joe Manchin's opposition to the filibuster. I think that it's pretty open that these groups exert a lot of influence as much influence as they can on members of Congress. And I think that that the older school way of accepting the role of lobbyists in Washington absolutely has a role in Joe Manchin's thinking.
I think that is totally true and needs to become a much more common, like, how often do you hear any representatives talking about a member of their caucus like that? I mean, the right attacks the right, not necessarily pointing out the lobbyists because they like the lobbyists too, but we need to see more of that on the Democratic side.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's funny because there's a reason why the right and everyone is so fixated on AOC. It's because she shows leadership, right? Mm-hmm. It's because even though she's not in the Democratic leadership, she speaks like she is. She says things that belong in our political moment, that respond to problems that we all understand are rampant within Washington, like dark money. She's not afraid to call Joe Manchin out by name, right? And meanwhile, other Democrats somehow still hold out hope for him. I guess Pelosi thinks she still believes in Joe Manchin. No, and I think pointing out the dark money, reining in dark money, reining in corporate spending and campaign spending, and that aspect of HR 1 is incredibly crucial. And it's something that a lot of mainstream news outlets have also skimped on, and they haven't looked at, because it is far more sweeping than just protecting voting rights. It's actually protecting our democracy in a lot of new ways, in two other ways, in securing elections, right, and having better protections, which I think we all agree we need, and then also getting money out of campaigns. And nobody wants to talk about that because that sort of fingers everybody. Like, that's like pointing the finger at both Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. And AOC is there just waiting, trying to birth a new Democratic Party. And man, if we were smart, we would give her more power.
We would. Yeah, I feel like in the same, well, like one of the reasons that Bernie took off, you know, in early 2015 was because he talked about things in a way that was obviously true and that you never heard politicians talk about.
Yes.
Mainly about like, you know, the millionaires and the billionaires. She does that for so many different issues. And that's why I think that she's so important. You laid out basically everything. The only thing I would add is, and this is more of the, hey, let's pointlessly remind people of history that no longer matters because everyone's moved on from the truth. She's totally right that he is hearkening back to this bygone era of Republicans who are willing to do bipartisan stuff. She's totally right. That doesn't exist anymore. But let's also add, the reason they were doing bipartisan stuff, that stuff wasn't good. Like, they had similar interests in some areas. The interests were not the interests of the working class. So even that era sucked for most Americans, but we don't even have that anymore. Laura Trump is making a bid to be worst Trump, which is difficult. There's a lot of competition, but I want to play a little bit of her appearing on Jeanine Pirro's show to talk about what she thinks should be happening down at the border.
This
disgraceful to see. And I don't know what you tell the people that live at the southern border. I guess they better arm up and get guns and be ready. And maybe they're going to have to start taking matters into their own hands.
I don't know what the context is supposed to be for that, what the excuse is supposed to be for that. When you don't just like sort of tiptoe along trying to inspire violence. She literally said, take matters into your own hands. That's the explicit version. That's the thing you try not to say. She just said that. If you're at the border, get a gun and take matters into your own hands. That's madness.
She knows where she is, okay? She's on Jeanine Pirro's show. If you incite violence, you get an automatic shot of whiskey. That's how it works. She's not gonna go home without the shot of whiskey. Like, so anyway, I mean, so she's dressing for the part. And of course, and this is not the first time the right has said essentially these things, you know. And guess what? People are armed up. Like there are self-proclaimed vigilante groups that patrol the border. And then there are also amazing humanitarian organizations that also leave out water for people who are trying to cross the border. Wanna guess who's more heavily policed? Yeah, we've all seen Border Patrol agents dumping fresh water out. That was left there for migrants so that they, you know, wouldn't die. And look, it's a little bit of a no man's land. And once again, we absolutely need to defund Border Patrol and ICE. Like they are, you do not understand. They are vastly overfunded. They have more money than I believe every other department combined, every other federal department combined. Border Patrol supersedes that budget. We've poured endless amounts of money into the border. And maybe it's time to actually spend money, you know, fixing the broken immigration system, putting more judges in asylum courts, having people actually be able to make their case, be able to live safely. Not to mention, you know, what Kamala Harris did last week in terms of going to Guatemala and telling people not to come here, and then giving a very small amount of vaccines to the people of Guatemala, like 500,000, which is nothing. There's far more that can be done, but yeah, Lara, she knows where she is. This is nothing new, and yeah, it will lead to people dying.
Yep, it's Fox, so they'll never get in trouble for any of it. Now you in what you were saying, you expressed, you know, obviously like a desire for the system to focus on actually helping the people who are being victimized by the system. She wants to sort of pretend to do that as well. She went on to say, these people should never make this dangerous journey here. It's bad for Americans, it's bad for the migrants, it's bad all around. So like, you know, I apologize if I pitched her as not caring about those people. She acknowledges it's bad for them. And wants it to be worse because after that dangerous journey, she wants them to meet gun-toting Southerners. That's what she wants to be waiting for them. Like, so there's the people who leave the water in the desert, and then there's the people who want someone with a shotgun to be standing there to take matters into their own hands. So that's fun. Now, I think we have a little bit more, actually, I think this focusing on Jeanine Pirro. So get ready for that. Hopefully we have subtitles for the slurring, but here is what she had to say.
This is a vice president who is a woman. You and I both want women to succeed, but it looks so much like the woman is in over her head. You know, even in my open, I wanted to say, put on your big girl pants and stop with the giggling. Stop looking like you don't know how to answer a question.
I love that in America, you can just take someone randomly that posts on Facebook and give them a TV show. That's just Jeanine Pirro just yelling, put on your big girl pants.
You know, okay, look, I love women. I want them to succeed. And I believe that we should stick together, you know, solidarity. That being said, you are an evil, dirty bitch. And I hate everything that you do.
There was like a little bit of your Susan Collins there, but it sort of worked.
It kind of,
yeah, 100%.
There was a little, there was a bit of Collins.
But yeah. I know how to do Jeanine Pirro.
Yeah, I try. Like I'm not as good as Cecily.
Unfortunately, we don't have Cecily to talk about this. But yeah, look, I have problems with Kamala Harris, trust me. on this issue, I have problems with Kamala Harris. The issue with Kamala Harris isn't that she needs to put on her big girl pants. That's not the actual issue. And bear in mind, as wrong as Kamala has been on this and many other issues, there's nothing she was gonna say on that trip that would result in Jeanine Pirro like happily tipping a martini to her or anything like that. That wasn't actually going to happen. And when she, and finally the irony of like saying, stop your giggling like you don't know how to answer a question, and then Laura Trump giggles a little bit. No, no, we're being serious now. That's the thing, we're saying women have to be serious. Anyway, okay, so that's unfortunately all the time we have. We're gonna be doing our top 10 list. Francesca, thank you as always. Everyone check out the Bituation Room. It's awesome, JR was just on it, so go check that out.
Yeah.
We're gonna be doing our top 10 list. So if you're a member on YouTube, check that out later on. And until next time, stay safe out there, stay sane out there. I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.